Hello, everyone. I'm Liz Chambers. Last July, we reported on John Conyers' efforts to hold our leaders accountable for what many believe are high crimes against the United States of America.
Because he has introduced a bill, House Resolution 635, H. Res. 635, that would create an investigation to make recommendations on impeachment.
In recent months, calls for impeachment have moved from the corporate-controlled Congress to state legislatures, pressed on by a handful of courageous citizens.
President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. If the Downing Street minutes are true, that the President was fixing the intelligence, manipulating the information, deceiving the United States Congress and the American people, and knew full well that there was no real threat posed by Iraq, then that specific document constituted a felony.
Despite the overwhelming case against the President, Bush's most loyal supporters continue to insist that talk of impeachment is merely a partisan ploy.
And really what this is all about is, they did this in 2004, they tried to run against Bush. I worked for a congressional campaign here, and our opponent attacked Bush more than he ever even talked about us, because they're trying to use his low approval rating to win their campaigns, rather than run against their local candidates. He's broken no laws. You can disagree with the president all you want. That's your right in this country, but there are no laws that have been broken. The wiretapping is a program that's been used by multiple presidents over years.
I think that we live in a very dangerous moment here. And I recognize, you know, people are going to say, well, Republicans control both houses. You know, how is there ever going to be this kind of investigation? Well, first, I think good Republicans, along with good Democrats, along with good independents and good Green Party members and good libertarians, all ought to stand up for democracy. All ought to stand up for democracy.
Americans of all political leanings have begun to see behind the veil of propaganda. Take a look at this updated version of the famous red state, blue state map prepared by Chris Bowers using recent survey data. Red areas represent counties where Bush's approval ratings remain above 50%. Apparently, the half-truths and lies that America has been hearing from official podiums no longer jive with what comedian Stephen Colbert jokingly calls their gut.
Do you know you have more nerve endings in your gut than you have in your head? You can look it up.
In Iraq, for example, the promise of a new democracy now appears to have been a poorly planned, poorly executed imperial power play based on a lie. But citizens are stepping forward to demand answers.
And so I would like to ask you to be upfront with the American people. Why did you lie to get us into a war that was not necessary and that has caused these kinds of casualties? Yeah. Why?
Well, first of all, I haven't lied. I did not lie then.
A few days after that exchange, another group of citizens, including Ray McGovern, the CIA veteran, approached one of Secretary Rumsfeld's homes, this one in Washington, D.C., to demand accountability. Police later arrested several of the protesters.
I think that our leaders, including our appointed leaders like Donald Rumsfeld, they have to know that we're out there. Congress isn't doing its job, so we have to do it for them. Rumsfeld has to realize that when he lies us into a war that has killed 2,450 U.S. servicemen and women and countless Iraqis, that we're going to object to that. We don't think that's right. And he's not going to be able to start another one in Iran as he intends.
In another related act of defiance, 16 Americans were arrested for attempting to disrupt a secret Halliburton meeting. Their goal, to hold the giant corporation responsible for its activities in Iraq and elsewhere. At Boston College, an adjunct professor resigned his comfortable teaching post to protest the choice of Condoleezza Rice as graduation commencement speaker. His explanation, I'm not writing this letter simply because of an objection to the war against Iraq. My concern is more fundamental. Simply put, Rice is a liar. She is a diplomat whose central allegiance is not to the democratic cause of this nation, but absolute power. Using the word diplomat to describe Rice, however, may be too generous. when the president of Iran sent a letter to the U.S. last month offering to reopen diplomatic relations for the first time since 1980, Rice rejected the offer. It was later revealed that Rice responded to the letter without reading it, before it had even been translated into English. The courage of private citizens who are speaking out stands in sharp contrast to the behavior of leading senators and representatives of both parties. For example, House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi earned the ire of progressives when she announced that even if the Democrats regain a majority, they will not pursue impeachment.
But I don't see us going to a place of impeachment.
Is impeachment off the table?
Well, you never know where the facts take you, but for any president. But that isn't what we're about. What we're about is going there and having high ethical standard.
What are the legal justifications for impeachment of Mr. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney? The litany of potential crimes grows daily. Here's a condensed overview. First, the exposure of CIA agent Valerie Plame is back in the headlines. The discovery of handwritten notes by Dick Cheney adds further evidence that the White House was directly involved in what may have been, at the very least, an act of perjury. Journalist Charlie Savage of the Boston Globe reports that President Bush has knowingly broken about 750 laws since taking office. How is this possible? He simply signs a statement authorizing himself to break each law. He's not the first president to try to put himself above the law.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
With ample evidence that our leaders are moving to seize unconstitutional power, you may wonder why more citizens aren't taking to the streets. Bruce Gagnon, a writer and activist, says the simple answer is fear.
But what's holding most people back, I think, is what I call the success mythology. We're all taught from the earliest age, keep your nose clean, don't rock the boat, climb the corporate ladder, you can't beat City Hall. You know, it's kind of the old Soviet Union. They used to say, if you wanted to get ahead, if you wanted to have a better apartment, if you wanted to get a better job, you had to join the party. Well, in America, people know that if you keep your mouth shut, you got a better chance of moving up, especially in a corporate-dominated society. Well, so people know then to become a quote-unquote activist has certain dangers that come with it. And so I think it's no coincidence that people will come up to people like me and others who are activists and say, you know, I want to thank you very much. I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing, but I could never do it. You know, I've got a mortgage and, you know, I've got the kids to put through college, but please keep doing what you're doing. So there are people that are with us and that are hoping we'll go forward and they're hoping that this thing is going to break. They'd like to join us, but they're afraid. They're job scared. And until we really deal with that success mythology in America that says climbing the corporate ladder is more important than anything else. It's even more important than looking out for your own children's future, dealing with global warming, or making sure there's still a constitution around when they grow up. And until we deal with that issue, I think we're always going to be kind of behind the eight ball.
More after this.
Every week, there seems to be a new war, another extinct species, diseases running wild, more hungry people. I'm setting out on a journey to the ground zeros of the world, searching for the sacred inside the scared.
Human beings live in this small blue planet. Some form of problem always there.
People were screaming, run, run for your life, and I had my dead son in my arms.
For me, the collective spirit is sacred. There is possibility if there is compassion.
Serbs, they are always shooting tam, ta 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 tam. It's one music phrase, their national song, you know.
If ordinary human beings can see their own suffering, then perhaps they become aware of the suffering of others.
Why is it that sacred turns into scared? And why do so many people in the name of what they're calling sacred go and scare everybody else? They haven't yet touched on what's really sacred.
Breathe in suffering. Breathe out compassion.
Gagnon believes that Americans have been purposely set at one another's throats, Republicans against Democrats, when they should be focused on the growing power of our privatized military corporations. Companies such as Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, and McDonnell Douglas, he says, often call the shots in the White House, the Congress, and the media. How is the media involved? By glossing over every new assault on the U.S. Constitution.
Here, first of all, this does not imply the NSA is listening to domestic phone calls you or I would make, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so what kind of information are they gathering?
That's called spin. It's a technique used to trivialize the implications of a story.
If what you say is true in the piece, is that lawful to do what they're doing?
That's the big question. It would be open to debate. No doubt NSA and the Bush administration would argue it certainly is. ACLU and others in the civil libertarian side of the aisle, however, would probably have a different point of view.
That propaganda tool is called framing. By suggesting that the Bush administration has a mere difference of opinion with progressive groups, the reporter has downplayed the significance of any legal implications.
Yes, it is not great to necessarily hear they're collecting our phone records, but it's a heck of a lot better than collecting our remains.
Journalist Greg Palast points out that wiretapping of our phones represents just one tiny facet of the bigger information-gathering project underway at the direction of neoconservatives.
At this point, we really haven't been told from law enforcement officials how many people have actually been subject to identity theft and how much to the extent the crime is there. So we still need to wait for that investigation to continue.
Will you have to start setting aside reserves, though, for any liabilities that may accrue as a consequence of what transpired?
Well, clearly, we're looking at the financial implications, and as we better understand the ultimate liability and responsibility, we will do the appropriate reserving if necessary, although we don't believe at the moment that that's necessary. Well, I mean, the world is a risky place to live, work, and do business, and I believe that information is the most powerful weapon to mitigate that risk used responsibly. If you look in society today, 3% of all volunteer workers have an undisclosed criminal violation.
Greg Palast reports that ChoicePoint is quietly selling your personal information to the government. ChoicePoint is largely funded and run by Republicans and was the same firm that supplied the wildly inaccurate list of 94,000 felons to Catherine Harris of Florida in 2000. That faulty information was used to justify George Bush's appointment to the presidency. Why worry about the collection of personal information? Here's just one historic example of how such power can be abused. According to a book by Edwin Black, when the Nazis took control of Germany, the IBM company created a punch card system to identify hundreds of thousands of Jewish citizens. You may have seen the numbers tattooed on the arms of prisoners at the Auschwitz concentration camp. Those numbers were not random. They corresponded with IBM's punch card system. Data mining made the apprehension, movement, and genocide of the Jewish people a reality.
But the trial system, radio frequency ID tags worn along with photo ID cards, gets a failing grade from some parents.
It's an invasion of their privacy. It's demeaning and dangerous.
Some worry that outsiders could track their children off campus or that information could be hacked.
But you don't understand, some people, it scares them.
School officials say one of the big advantages of this system is that it allows them to keep more accurate daily attendance records, which determines the amount of state funding they get.
The microchip is tamper-proof, it's secure. No one can take your microchip and use it to their advantage to gain access to your facility.
The chip, developed by Applied Digital Solutions, is similar to those used in the U.S. to identify and return runaway dogs. One in this patient details his blood type, allergies, and the fact he has Alzheimer's disease. The device is now awaiting approval from the Food and Drug Administration. The next step, say researchers, is developing an implantable chip with a global positioning system to track people miles away, whether kidnapped or lost, just as cars can now be traced. A kind of LoJack for the body.
This background surveillance shadow world is finally catching the attention of some state lawmakers who have begun to resist. For example, some are rejecting the mandatory ID card authorized by Congress last year.
Does the president support national ID cards?
The president supports the legislation that just passed the House.
Hand in hand with this KGB-style spying push is the effort to militarize our government, locking us into a state of perpetual war under domestic martial law.
And the hope is that someday every state in the country will have one of these fusion centers. It's a central building where local law enforcement and federal agents can share counterintelligence, and that should help everyone. In fact, officials say we'll all be safer because of them. Let's take a look at Colorado's brand new facility, the Fusion Center. By collecting, digesting, and disseminating information, facilities like this one will analyze local and federal intelligence. Now, one individual criminal activity they think could lead to something bigger.
CIA veteran Ray McGovern has revealed that lawmakers slipped a quiet change into the Intelligence Authorization Act of 2007. This provision gives new powers to the CIA and NSA, allowing them to become involved with local law enforcement.
The American SIGINT system, in the normal course of its foreign intelligence activities, inevitably captures this kind of information. Information to, from, or about what we call a U.S. person.
Now, Bush wants to pay private military contractors billions of your tax dollars to create a high-tech, no-immigrant zone along the Mexican border. In addition, the Cheney-Bush White House plans to expand the role of the National Guard along that border.
And we will certainly not do this in any manner that does not make us at least as prepared as we were for Hurricane Katrina last year.
We need to make sure, too, that whenever we knock on doors, people refuse to leave. We need to make note, call it in.
They say there are no orders to use force, just strong persuasion, sometimes entering open houses with guns drawn, and instructions to disarm anyone inside.
You said guns will be taken?
Yeah, no one will be able to be armed. We will take all weapons. Sir.
That happened today in this wealthy neighborhood where homeowners had armed themselves to protect their mansions. Residents were handcuffed on the ground. In the end, police took their weapons but let them stay in their homes.
Where will our increasingly privatized militarism lead? This new uniform is being prepared for the U.S. military. Look familiar? Truth is sometimes stranger than fiction. Ironically, the failures of U.S. foreign policy have given socialist politics a tremendous boost in many Latin American countries. According to The Nation, Latin America is experiencing a leftist renaissance. Repulsed by U.S. imperialism, the citizens of Colombia, Mexico, Brazil, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Venezuela are leaning towards leftist presidents in coming elections.
Lo peor que ha habido en este planeta, de lo peorcito que ha habido, se llama George W. Bush. Dios libre al mundo de esta amenaza.
But this revolutionary shift in Latin American politics didn't happen overnight, and none of it took place without sacrifice. Check out these clips from a powerful new documentary about journalist-filmmaker Raimundo Glazer of Argentina. You can see the movie at the Quad Theater in New York in June.
¿Debía seguir haciendo sus películas o debía insertarse dentro de esa lucha política? Y la tesitura mayor fue la de inserción como cineastas.
Había influencia de los servicios en las selecciones de los libros, en el Instituto de Cine, en el Fondo de las Artes. Hubo cada vez más condicionantes ideológicos de una censura férrea y estricta. Era necesario una independencia instrumental, técnica, que nos iba a permitir de última una independencia ideológico-estética también en la realización de nuestros productos. El de Raimundo sería un caso de esos, es decir, él como cameraman en Telenoche.
Señoras y señores, esto es Telenoche. Tendrán todas las noticias de interés producidas en la semana en el país y en todo el mundo. Aquí están.
Buenas tardes, amigos. Aquí les habla Raimundo Glazer en una nota especial para la División Noticias de Pro Arcel.
Closer to home, former Vice President Al Gore also has found his own bearings in the ruins of the Bush presidency. Although Gore hardly mentioned the environment during his campaign for president, he has regained his courage on the topic and is heavily featured in a new film on the perils of global warming.
Look at the 10 hottest years ever measured. They've all occurred in the last 14 years. And the hottest of all was 2005. The scientific consensus is that we are causing global warming. I am Al Gore. I used to be the next president of the United States of America. This is Patagonia, 75 years ago, and the same glacier today. This is Mount Kilimanjaro, 30 years ago, and last year. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro.
This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. The temperature increases are taking place all over the world,
and that's causing stronger storms.
This is the biggest crisis in the history of this country.
Early this morning, Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans.
Is it possible that we should prepare against other threats besides terrorists?
From Paramount Classics comes a film that has shocked audiences everywhere they've seen it.
The Arctic is experiencing faster melting. If this were to go, sea level worldwide would go up 20 feet. This is what would happen in Florida. Around Shanghai, home to 40 million people. The area around Calcutta, 60 million. Here's Manhattan. The World Trade Center Memorial would be underwater. Think of the impact of a couple hundred thousand refugees, and then imagine 100 million. We have to act together to solve this global crisis. Ability to live is what is at stake.
Stay tuned for Kevin Quinn.
We hear a lot about how Democrats and Republicans have become two sides of the same coin. Unfortunately, this criticism is often well deserved. Democrats in name only, Joe Lieberman is the most obvious example, have further muddied the distinction by voting against Democratic ideals at almost every turn. Who can forget the kiss? Democrats seem determined to crush any sign of intelligent life in the party. When Russ Feingold of Wisconsin called for a censure of President Bush, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi skulked off into the shadows and left him alone to be savaged by the corporate media. Then there's the Paul Hackett fiasco. Remember him? He's the tough, righteous Iraq veteran who recently dropped out of the Ohio Senate race. Guess who pulled the plug on his campaign?
I was asked by Senator Schumer and Senator Reid and others to get out of the race.
The Democratic Party asked you not to run.
Correct. They backed away from supporting me because they realized that I'm outspoken, that I believe in what I say, and that I'm willing to fight for what I believe in.
Oh, there's your problem right there.
If I were a spanker like Tony Blair, I would suggest that it's time to take some of these Democrats out to the woodshed and beat some sense into them. But because I prefer nonviolent solutions, I instead invited a special guest to play bad cop. He's a well-known retired Democrat, and he wants to have a little chat with them. A fireside chat.
It's been a long while since we had one of these little chats. But I think the time is right. You see, I've been watching you throw away every opportunity to make this country greater. Instead of mining Republican scandals for political gold, you seem determined to turn that gold into straw. I'd like to remind you of something I've said many times before. Fear is the enemy, and fear has got you by the short hairs. What are you afraid of? Politics is not now and never was a game for the weak-hearted. It's a brawl, an ideological brawl among storytellers. In almost every case, the party with the best story and the boldest storyteller wins. I came into office at a time when workers were threatening to burn down every building in Washington. Robber barons and fat cats controlled our banks. But we took charge, my friends, and we took responsibility. We Democrats made promises, and we kept them. We got people working again. It took years, but we never stopped fighting because we knew it was the right thing to do. We also knew it was the right thing to do when we went to war. We committed our lifeblood to a world struggle that was factual and necessary, unlike this half-baked military adventure in the Middle East. War should be a last resort, not a sledgehammer to use on nations weaker than ourselves. A few humble words of advice. The next time that bumbler in the White House asks you to sign off on some pointless war or get behind some asinine plan to rob the elderly of their Social Security or change bankruptcy laws in a way that punishes the working people of this country, I want you to stand up in front of those darn cameras you love so much and say, "Not in my name, Mr. President. Not in my name."
Democrats still have a long way to go in the minds of voters to retake the House and Senate. And if they do get their wish, what happens next? Will they take FDR's lead and put this country back together? Or will they serve up a Clinton-esque version of Republican light and continue to fiddle as our environment, our jobs, and our standing in the world go up in flames? We may not have FDR, or better yet, Eleanor Roosevelt, to lead the way in putting America back on the path toward peace and prosperity, but let's hope the likes of good people such as Russ Feingold, John Conyers, and Patrick Fitzgerald can show these mincing Democrats what it means to show real leadership. I'm Kevin Quinn, and we'll see you next month. Liberty News TV depends on the support of viewers like you, not corporations. Visit our website at libertynewstv.com and let us know you care.